Welcome back to the Safe Space Podcast. We are your amazing ADA podcast. My name is Michelle and I am your host. Be sure to take a listen for those two code words so that way you can get your free CEUs. I'm really excited about today's guest. So today we're going to be talking a lot about ABA in the classroom and what other perfect human being could I ask for than Stephanie Rivera from Wired Behavior. I'm really excited to talk to her a little bit about ABA in the classroom and how her experience has helped her with, you know, basically consulting with teachers and being in school. So I'm really excited to welcome Stephanie Rivera on this podcast tonight. Hi, Stephanie.
Hey, Michelle. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, of course. Of course. Well, one question that I always like to ask is tell us how you got in the field.
Alrighty. So I moved from Mexico almost 11 years ago. And I moved from Cancun to Massachusetts and I wanted to pursue my master's in special ed. I knew there was something in special ed I wanted to grow into, learn, and become master's in. So I wanted to do special ed, but when I moved, it took me, I don't know, I will say maybe 7 months to figure things out being in a new country. And what I chose and what I ran into was ABA. And I got to tell you my experience in ABA, you know, when you have never done, seen or being around ABA and you're first experiencing that, you know, like the field and seeing the clients that were progressing and, you know, reaching milestones and just everything. Like you are new, you've never been, you step in, you see what ABA is about. And that's when I was like, you know what? I do not want to do special ed. I need to go into ABA. That's what it is. I'm not doing anything else but ABA. So it was a very long journey for me. Like it was very long for me to become a BCBA. And with my background in my bachelor's in education, I have always had the opportunity to do a mix of it, to be in the classroom, to do ABA, to even work in early intervention and all of that. So that's kind of how I came about. I moved from Mexico wanting to do special ed, but ran into ABA. I fell in love and I went for it.
That is amazing. Oh, that is so awesome. I have to know about the culture shock between Mexico and Massachusetts. I just have to know for myself what that was like.
I honestly can tell you the biggest thing was in school, right? Like I moved from Mexico and I wanted to just go and get into my master's in the States, in Massachusetts. And I'm like, you know, there were many things. Like when I look back now, I'm like, I cannot believe, I don't know, I failed this class because I didn't know this basic stuff that is not even like school stuff. Like it's just cultural thing in the school, like, you know, how things work, how you communicate with people, things that you need to do on your own as a student in the States that is just expected of a student. I don't know, so many different things that I was just trying to understand. As you say, like the cultural shock, it was more of my obstacle than my actually ability to understand ABA. Like ABA is hard as it is, but the actual, you know, path for and journey of understanding being a student in the States was the biggest thing. That definitely gave me for sure the biggest of the struggles, I will say.
Oh my goodness. I cannot even imagine, you know, you're going from, you know, a whole other country up to the United States where you're having to just sort of like shift the way that you learn. And, you know, like, I can only imagine, you know.
Yes. Yes. But you know what, at the end of the day, I stayed consistent and here we are. I am finally a BCBA, the thing that I wanted the most when I first moved. And even though I moved to the States thinking I want to be a teacher in the States and get my master's in special ed, everything, as I said, really shifted really quickly as soon as I got to know ABA. And so quickly I said, no, I want to be a BCBA. That's what I want to be. And it took me a long time, but I never stopped. I just kept going and that's it. And now I am doing both. You know, I am able to do ABA in the classroom, and that is a whole nother ball game that I never even thought of before.
Oh my goodness. And you know, first of all, that again, like, I'm just so impressed by how you're able to integrate, you know, your BCBA knowledge into the classroom. And so I'm curious to know, you know, how a day in your life looks. What is it like to go into the schools and, you know, what is it like to be a consultant in, you know, a school for teachers?
I think I have the upper hand in a way compared to other BCBAs when it comes to understanding teachers, right? Because I've been I was a teacher before pandemic, during pandemic, after pandemic, so I know what they're going through, and my experience in the classroom has been it has been different. For example, I've done first grade, third grade, special ed, fifth, kindergarten through fifth. So I've had different opportunities and roles within education, and I'm able to, you know, also have that perspective where I'm like, all right, you know, I know what first grader teachers are going through. That is definitely not the same as third graders, but they are still elementary teachers, and this is where they, you know, where they are at together and things like that. So when I go into classrooms or schools, that's what I think of. You know, I've been here, I know what they're going through, and I'm not going to ask them to do anything I wouldn't have done in my classroom at all.
Yeah. Oh my goodness. And you know, it's so interesting you say that too, because, you know, it is true. Different teachers go through different things. It's kind of like when we think about it, like our caseloads, right? You know, each BCBA works with a set of clients, and, you know, everyone is different in their own capacity. You know, even as a teacher, you know, first grade is going to be different from third grade in the sense that there's first graders are younger than third graders, and they might do things a little differently. You know what I mean?
Yes. Yes. And I will even say, to make it more relatable to ABA, for those BCBAs that they were either behavior therapists or RBTs before, right? When you are a BCBA, and you wear an RBT or BT for so long, you already know what that is and what it feels. So you are expected to be more realistic in what you ask and how you teach your RBTs. You're gonna hopefully get in there and show them and do it for them and show them how to do it, and different steps that maybe a BCBA who's never been in the field is just gonna step in and then say, hey, I need you to do this, or read what my programs and do it. It's a different approach when you have done it in the past, like I have done it before.
Yeah, you know, and it's very interesting because a lot of us who have come into classrooms don't have that same experience. And so for me, like walking into a classroom, I've never been a teacher before, so I cannot personally relate to that. But, you know, someone who has been a teacher and someone who knows what it's like to be a teacher, you might have like the upper hand, like you were saying a little earlier, the upper hand in that. And so that being said, I'm curious to know like how that has been effective and how that's helped you consult with your teachers.
I think the main difference in how I go into classrooms is, just like I said before, I am not going to be asking teachers to do something that I know I couldn't do in my classroom. I'm not going to walk in and give them many data sheets or programs that are just almost like impossible to run or to document, you know, because sometimes BCBAs can walk in the classroom and be like, hey, I need you to take data on this and that, because that is us, right? This is ABA, and I feel it. But however, as a teacher, I know, like, sometimes, you know, it's not a joke. Like, sometimes we forget to even use the bathroom. Like, it's just bananas. Like, and you want me to take data. Like, I cannot even follow what my own body is telling me to do. So it is so busy and it's so distracting, and everything is kind of like thrown at you back to back for 8 hours straight. That is just very hard. And so I'm not saying that I don't ask them to take data, but I'm saying that I try to find strategies or ways to make it very easy for them, or find ways for me to collect that data instead of giving that task to them. So I think that's what I make different. I try to be realistic to what I know I could have done in the classroom or not.
Yeah, you know, I feel like in general, that's just so important, because I feel like when we're in a school and we're in a classroom, you know, sometimes, and there's unfortunately a lot of stigma with, you know, BCBAs and RBTs going into schools because of reasons like that, you know, us giving them, you know, a bunch of things to do on top of their normal responsibilities. And, you know, we do have to think realistically in that sense. We do have to say, okay, we can't just give them 50 sheets of paper and say, here, take data on my child doing this, you know? So kind of like on the line of stigma, you know, what are some common misconceptions or stigmas associated with ABA techniques among teachers that are being used in the classroom? And how do you work to address to overcome them?
Right. So common misconceptions are that I am coming to their classroom to judge or evaluate their performance, or that I'm going to tell that their supervisor about their performance. So pretty much they are constantly thinking or seem to think that I am there because they are the problem, not that I am there to help them with their problems. So one of my practices to overcome this misconception is to let them know that right off the bat, why I'm there and what is it that I'm going to be doing. So meaning I am here to understand your classroom dynamic and help you based on your strengths, whatever you need. Remember, I'm here for you. Whatever I observe is to analyze and determine best practices that work for you. I will be communicating my feedback to you first, and I am here to find strategies and solutions, not to take notes on what it's a problem that is already known. So I pretty much let them know that I'm there to help them. And I also let them know, you know, my notes are open for you to read and we're going to go over it. And if you have questions or I can email them to you, like I make them feel very comfortable because it isn't easy to be, you know, running your classroom with someone observing you, and especially someone who is just sitting in the corner typing, you know, typing all the time, and just you're constantly thinking or overthinking, like, oh my goodness, did I say it wrong? Did I do it? Did I say what I meant to say? Oh, that came out wrong. Or everything just happens when you're being observed, you know. So, and we know that in ABA. So that is exactly what I try to avoid and just make them feel as comfortable as possible. And when it comes to the stigma, I am very clear in letting them know I am here for you. This is not to look at your performance. I'm trying to find ways to help you.
And I'm so glad that you are open about that, like right up at the very front, because sometimes, you know, I've actually been in a situation where a BCBA came into a classroom and she was almost acting as if she was the teacher's supervisor. But the truth of the matter is that she wasn't the teacher's supervisor. She was giving her feedback as if she was. And unfortunately, that sort of like broke the relationship between not only the BCBA and the teacher, but our entire team, because I was a technician at the time, the entire team with the teacher and the instructional aide. So I'm curious to know, what challenges have you faced being a BCBA helping out with classroom consultations and helping teachers out as well?
Again, one of the things is more of the building relationship with them, you know, being truthful and honest. I'm not going to tell them that I'm there to help them and then give them so much work before I leave. I am not going to tell them that my notes are for them and then walk out of their classroom and go to their supervisor and say something that to them that wasn't in my notes. So it's kind of like, you know, being honest and really doing what I'm saying to them so they can trust me. And to be honest, that's the only way that I've done it and has worked to the point where they know what it is. They know that when I walk in the classroom, they know what to expect and they are open to share or even, you know, like, oh, I'm glad you came because I have this and that, or, oh, it was too bad you didn't come yesterday because actually yesterday was the day that I wanted you here because this and that. So they understand now the dynamic when I walk in or when I come back, right? Where they are like, all right, I understand you are my support and I am to use you when you are here because you are, this is your area of expertise and you understand what I'm going through, but I don't know your what you know, and you're here to help me. So that's kind of like the challenges that I have overcome, but it's always about doing what you're saying. You cannot say one thing to the teachers and then turn your back and do differently, because you will lose respect for sure.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, I think, you know, just the way that I've always seen it, it's just like, you know, you're stepping into their environment, you know, you are a guest in their environment, and in their classroom, you know, they have things that, you know, they're doing, and, you know, you might have feedback, but you also might have, but we don't want to hold biases. We don't want to hold judgments. That's in our code of ethics at the same time. But that being said, you know, I feel like that's kind of like a big thing, like a big stigma that we unfortunately are associated with, just because, you know, right now when it comes to, you know, like, for example, in Virginia, I know that there are some issues where we can't go into schools because of those types of like regulations. And so it's really important that we like remember that, you know, it's really important that we're stepping in, like we have to remember that we are stepping into their environment, you know?
Yes. And that's, as I said before, it is challenging for anyone who's being observed. I mean, whether you're a teacher or not, when you are being observed doing your job, no matter how great you are at it, there's a point where you're going to feel nervous. It's going to start overthinking. I don't know, things are going to change and maybe not go as great as you planned. And, you know, it is important for me that when I go in the classroom, they feel as comfortable as possible, because ultimately it's going to benefit me, because I'm going to be able to observe really the most natural dynamic if I can make that teacher feel comfortable when I'm there.
Absolutely. And I mean, again, you know, it's so amazing to even just like hear such a refreshing point of view on this. And with that too, let's talk about, you know, feeling comfortable. Let's talk about feedback. So when you're providing feedback to teachers on their implementation of what we view as ABA techniques and what we know to be as ABA techniques, how do you ensure that that feedback is constructive and conducive to their comfort and growth?
So I will say I let them know how this strategy is changing their students' behaviors. So what I try to do is that I take what they are doing and I give them feedback on that. For example, I tell them this is ABA, right? Because we walk in there and even like we know as a BCBA, you go into the grocery store and you're seeing ABA. You go to like wherever you go, you're seeing ABA. People like regular people don't do that, right? So I make sure that I'm not assuming she knows what ABA is, and I'm very specific with my feedback. So for example, I say, I noticed you are now using the Premix principle, which by saying Premix principle, I make sure I already explained to her, or I say first, then whatever strategy we discussed before. And so I noticed you are using the Premix principle to get students through the less exciting lessons. This is great because you compared to the last time I observed you, your lesson was interrupted only 3 times instead of 7. So I give her the feedback and I take that data that she's unable to take. But when I give her the data, like, oh, remember last time when I observed you and during, like your last lesson of the day, math, you got 7 interruptions and you actually weren't able to finish your lesson. Today, not only you finished your lesson, but you also had only 3 interruptions. And I also noticed you use this strategy, so I let them know that they are doing it and I showed them that they are doing it. And I feel like this is my way of, you know, kind of like teaching you about what ABA is and already showing you how you're doing it amazingly already. Like you're doing it, you just need to know that that is ABA.
That's awesome. And have your teachers ever been like, whoa, I did not realize that that was ABA. Like, and I can't believe that really worked. Like, you know, what have been some of the reactions you've gotten?
I think the biggest one, I observed a teacher and So, you know, like we're talking about this teacher being already done with one of the students, right? Coming to me like, Stephanie, like, I'm tired. I'm exhausted. I am done. Like, you don't understand. And I'm like, let me observe. Let me, you know, you go ahead and I'll talk to you after they go to PE. So I sit down, I take data. I know what I'm looking at because she's already, you know, I'm not going to waste my time looking at something else if she needs immediate help with a specific student. So I'm taking data. And then when they leave, I ask her, how many times do you think, so this is a 30-minute lesson period. And I'm like, how many times do you think you call this student's name? I don't know, like five? No, you did it 27. 27 in 30-minute period. You know what that means? That sometimes you're even saying the name, let's say for the sake of HIPAA, like Johnny, and you're like, Johnny, 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 Johnny. Yeah, like you don't even realize how often you're calling this student's name.
That's like
it is, I no wonder minute. You're... Yeah. No wonder you're exhausted. You are. So let's work on that. Let me give you some strategies to not only make you aware you're doing that, but also help you decrease that behavior on yourself so you can breathe. And, you know, of course, you're going to be so exhausted and you know, just wanting to just move on with this because, yes, it is too much. And you're not even realizing how much this is happening. So I think that was one of the most shocking even for me because it was just way too much. And for the teacher, not even, you know, like, again, she's doing so many things at the same time that she wasn't even able to identify or realize how much she was doing it, right? And yeah. Of course, ethically, I have to say here again, like, imagine how this student is feeling too. If you are feeling exhausted for calling out his name so many times in a 30-minute period, imagine also the student, how is the student feeling, you know? So what the student is most likely to engage in maladaptive behaviors when he's being called out and feel observed every single second of the day. And you're doing it because, you know, that's your motto, like that's your automatic reaction at this point. And it's not that you are wrong, but it's so amazing that I am able to get this data for you and give you strategies that will help you with this specifically. So that's kind of like what it looks like, conversations with teachers and what I give them and what we work on and things like that.
Yeah, I'm invested. Tell me, like, I'm so invested by this because, you know, you mentioned this and that's literally one time for every 60 seconds or almost one time for every 60
yes.
seconds. Like, if you want to put it in mathematical terms, which for me is like being very literal and thinking about like 27 times 30 minutes. I mean, that's amazing. And so I'm curious to know, like, you know, what happened next? Like, you know, what was the strategies that you ended up teaching to that teacher? And were they able to was she able to decrease the amount of times that she was saying the child's name?
Yeah. So first, right off that, after that conversation, she decreased by a lot immediately because she was already aware. She was in such shock because I didn't mention this, but when I was taking data, I had the teacher assistant with me, and I was explaining, I was walking the teacher assistant through what I was doing. So, because again, I try to teach everyone in the room. So when I leave, whoever is going to assist my teacher, I want to make sure that she's also trained and understands what we're going through. So it's not like the teacher is going through a behavior consultation and she also now needs to teach her TA, right? And so I'm doing it at the same time. So we are observing the teacher and I'm walking the TA through what I'm doing. So the TA was there to say, like, you did it, you know, like you did it 27 times. So it was a shocking conversation. And then, so with that, obviously, she believed it, right? It's not like I just threw a number. I had her TA to attest to my number and my observation. And so what we did is that right off, like immediately, she was noticing. Like, it's like when someone tells you, why are you, I don't know, playing with your hair all day? And you're like, oh, do I do that? And now you start realizing like, oh my gosh, yes, I do that. So she quickly decreased significantly because she realized, or she will catch herself, you know, like she will be like, Johnny, and then turn to me and be like, oh, I did it. And I'm like, that's okay. You're noticing. And that's what I need you to do. So what we did is that I also had her, I changed her perspective. So I said, okay, why are you calling Johnny? Because he's talking, because he's standing, because he's interrupting, because he's turning his body. All right. So he is engaging in behaviors you don't need him to engage in. So what I need you to do, which is going to sound almost impossible, because at the rate that you're going, it's almost impossible. What I need you to, even if it's the most random thing that is positive, I need you to shout out his name for a positive thing. And yeah, that's number one. I need you to start finding it, like whatever he's doing right, even if it is not like related to what you're teaching or doing, if it's something right, you're going to reinforce it out loud. So you're going to start like rewiring your brain into a positive mindset when every time you say Johnny, it's paired with a positive feedback, no more negative. And then, so that was one strategy. The other one was if you see Johnny standing, but you see that Hannah sitting next to him is sitting nicely, you are going to bite your tongue. You're not going to say Johnny, you're going to praise Hannah. And you're going to say, Hannah, I love how you are sitting. And you're going to move on and walk away. So, you know, so with it, this type of like, kind of like rewiring and training with the teacher, so she could just kind of like break the habit of being on Johnny, you know, like Johnny, 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 and all the negative. And so yeah, at the end of kind of like at the time of our consultation, the big turnout, it was that, right? Like I was able to bring the positivity in the classroom and help that relationship that clearly was, you know, not going well between the teacher and the student. And the one amazing thing is that when I was gone, the TA was there to be like, remember, you know, because also the TA was like, oh my goodness, I didn't realize, but I do it a lot too. And I'm like, well, many things happen. Number one, Johnny's a handful, yes. But number two, your teacher is modeling that behavior to you. So that's how you are going to assist her, because you're matching her teaching style, you know? So it was kind of like a whole dynamic that changed just for making them aware, giving them the data without having them take the data. I took the data for them, I presented it to them, and I gave them the whole perspective of this is what we're gonna do because this is what we're gonna come up with.
That's amazing. It really in general just sounded like, you know, you were able to really like break through and kind of see like, you know, how you, like what you were doing and kind of showing them, hey, like, this is what's happening. And, you know, this is why this is happening. It sort of sounded like there was a breakthrough in that. Am I right on that?
Yes. Yes. I will say so now that you are saying it.
Oh my goodness. And to kind of talk about like the flip side, right? Have you ever worked with someone who was just a little bit more resistant, someone who was like, you know, you showed them the data, but they were like, that's not true. Or I'm still going to keep doing it, even though that was, you know, you presented this data. Does that make sense?
Oh, yes. I think my most challenging students are the most experienced teachers. You know, when I walk into a teacher that is only in her first, even 5 years of teaching, they're more open to hearing and listening and collaborating. But when you walk into a classroom of a teacher that has been a teacher for 20 years, 25 years, or, you know, and that they have so much history with the entire school in so many generations, it yeah, is tricky to get them to understand, not only to understand that you are there to help them, but also to understand like, hey, ABA works. Because so again, I never go in saying like ABA works, we're going to do ABA. I pretty much manage, you know, I'm behavioral consultant. Like I don't go into like I'm a BCBA, or I don't sell myself out there as an ABA, just because I don't want them to already receive me with that vision, you know, like, oh, I know how this is going to go. Because again, there's a huge stigma. So I kind of make it in a way where they allow me to be myself and show them what I can do with them and for them. And I mean, at the end of the day, it's just that some teachers are harder to work with, but not impossible. And it's just, I have noticed that when they have been in their classroom and doing their job for so long, it's just harder for me to walk in and say, hey, let's do it a little bit differently, you know?
Yeah. And I can see that. Like, I'm going to give like the flip side of it. You know, I can see that because, you know, they've been doing this for so long and now like we're crossing their field, like we're crossing, you know, where they are, as opposed to, you know, we're just doing like our job. Like, you know, oh, I've been here for over 20 years, but I've, you know, as a teacher, but then, you know, you have a BCBA who's been a BCBA for, I don't know how many years, and may not necessarily, you know, cause that's where, again, like, I sort of feel, I sort of like understand where that stigma can come from, because, you know, I don't know that every single BCBA has been a teacher. I imagine not. I know I haven't, you know, so it's like, you know, so I'm thinking about it from like that perspective as well. You know what I mean?
Yes. Yes. Yes.
Yeah. So kind of like going into stigma a little bit further, you know, I'm curious to know, because BCBAs and RBTs and our field in general just has a bad reputation, you know, unfortunately, with going into schools, but I definitely can understand why. But that being said, what would you advise a BCBA who is about to go into a school and work with a teacher for the very first time in their career?
I think pairing is like the number one thing. You know, you need to go open to understand what they do, how they do it. And not only thinking of, oh, I'm going to understand what a teacher, what she's doing in her classroom, like more specifically, because every classroom looks so different. Every teacher has a different teaching style. And I can tell you, even for example, me being a first grade teacher in, I don't know, 2020, it looked way different than 2021 because of the students that you get, they are different. So you have to also evolve and change, right? So what I will say to any BCBA going in is to step back, take a minute to understand that teacher's personality, that teacher's approach to feedback, that teacher's approach to what they're doing, and also ask some questions. You know, like, for how long have you been working at this school or being a teacher? Because maybe it's a teacher with 10 years of experience, but only 1 year of experience in that classroom or in that school. So that also makes it different because she is wanting to keep up with what is being asked of her, right? So understanding, I will say for BCBAs, understanding the teacher's personality, asking questions of what even, you know, like how, put yourself to their service, right? Like, how can I help you? What would you like me to look when I come into your classroom? Which corner is the best, or you don't care? Or when do you want feedback? How do you want the feedback? Do you want me to leave right away and email it to you? Or do you want me to wait for you until your students are gone and we go over it together? Like, take the time to understand how that teacher wants to work with you before starting to drop all the suggestions and everything that you want to do. And maybe one teacher is going to be like, you know what, email me everything. I don't want any papers and I do not want to connect with you right after my class because I have a bunch of things to do. Maybe another teacher is like, I need to see it. So can you just tell me and walk me through? And so there's different types of personalities and how you receive feedback. And it is important that you understand what your teacher is expecting or driving at best so you can match with that style.
Absolutely. I can definitely understand that. And now we're going to go into our first code word for tonight's podcast. So the first code word is backpack. That is B-A-C-K-P-A-C-K. That is backpack. So kind of talking about your role as a BCBA consultant in the classroom, what is the difference between what you do as a behavior consultant in the classroom versus, you know, like, say, like a district BCBA or a BCBA who just works at the school. I'm curious to know like kind of how they differ from one another.
So here's the thing, mainly at the schools that I've gone, so I have kind of like two different roles. I am normally contracted to go into private schools. They have okay. me go and I go in, I sit, I observe, I give them the strategies, I write the feedback, I write a plan for them, I show them, I graph and present to them, this is how much you've grown, this is all you've learned, this is all the ABA strategies you're implementing now versus this and that. So I go in and I train them, I help them grow with more behavior classroom management. And for public schools, I go in for their professional development days and I do workshops. So for public schools, I don't get to go in the classrooms, but they bring me into their school to talk to them and teach them briefly in a 2-hour period of their PD or 1 hour about a specific topic. Because again, as you say, there's BCBAs that are contracted for the district. And that said, I have not seen what BCBAs do, but other teachers have explained to me, the BCBA in my school, they are even kind of like assigned students. So what I understand is that BCBAs for that work for districts, they have even kind of like assigned students where they need to go and visit specifically in the classrooms because of those specific students or situations that are assigned to them. That's what I understand. But what I do is for public schools, I do workshops, and for private schools, I go in and do the whole consultation and even workshops too.
That's so interesting. I'm curious to know too, like the differences, like a little bit more, you know, like how is one environment different from the other when it comes to going into the schools, going into a private school versus a public school?
Yes. And, you know, like it is a whole different game. I can tell you it is a whole different game because even the resources that they have is different. You know, like in private schools, they may not have as many or much resources as they have it in public schools. And that's what ultimately allows them to have a BCBA in their team, right? Where a private school needs to pay out of pocket to bring me in there and go through the whole behavior consultation package.
Wow. Okay. Yeah, I can definitely see that because, you know, certain schools might have more resources than others. And so kind of like on that and kind of thinking about just like cultural competence and sensitivity working in a variety of classrooms. Can you discuss like the role of cultural competence and sensitivity in your work as a BCBA consultant in diverse classroom environments?
I can tell you how funny it has been to run into my own culture.
Yeah.
Because it is so different, you know, like, and that's something that I had already learned. I've been in the States for almost 11 years, right? And so since I moved, I've been working in education or early intervention, ABA. Like I have been very blessed to be within my field and continue growing from the moment I moved. And so when I run into teachers that are Latinas, they are my hardest to work with because it is our culture to be loud, it is our culture to be more firm, and it is, you know, they believe like, oh no, I have to be loud and firm to gain respect from my students or to have that structure that I need to get through my day. And you have the other cultures that are more soft or that are more mellow and soft and spoken, you know, and it is a huge contrast. And so I need to kind of like break into my own culture and be like, no, guys, we can do, you know, like we can do it with positive reinforcement. There are many more strategies other than yelling. I know you're not yelling because you know, I know it sounds weird, but I know you're yelling because that's something that it's proven that works for you in your classroom, but it's working because, you know, out of fear or out of, you know, like it is more of a reaction than, I don't know. I need to get to like break through them, through their culture, to my own culture to teach them. And also what I do here is a lot of like role play. You know, when I walk into classrooms of Latina teachers that I take more hands-on. I'm like, will you let me show you? Will you let me do it? Can I, do you mind if I teach your math lesson? So they are like, oh, by any means, I'll sit and watch. And I'm like, okay, I'll do it. So throughout that modeling, that's when they are like, okay, I see what you're doing. I see what you're saying, you know, because I need to do it. I need to show them. So they are not only hearing, don't do this, instead do that. So that's what I do mostly kind of like with cultural, you know, challenges. I go in, I ask them, can I have your permission to teach your math lesson tomorrow? Or you know, whatever it is. And I'll show you what it looks like to do with praising this little Johnny that is, you know, the one that is breaking your nerves or whatever it is. So I show them. I go more hands-on with them.
Oh my goodness. Yeah. And I can definitely understand that. You know, sometimes that hands-on approach can really, really help. And, you know, sometimes, you know, certain people need certain methods of feedback being done for them. I feel like that's how it is, not just for teachers, but even for the people that we work with as like RBTs and, you know, even BCBAs. Like I know that some of my old technicians have had a lot of, have wanted to have like permanent product, like a form just to look at, you know, of, okay, here's your feedback for the day. Here's what, you know, we need to work on. Here's what we are working on. This is what you're doing really good at. So that really helps them. And then in other cases, that doesn't always work, you know? So I can definitely like see the different teaching and feedback styles kind of being there as well.
Yes.
So very cool. Very cool. Also too, I'm just so curious to know when it comes to that, like, I guess like when it comes to incorporating those principles in the classroom, you know, how do you incorporate those principles? You know, you mentioned modeling a lot, you know, so is it more like you're doing a lot more modeling with your teachers, or is it more like behavioral skills training where you're breaking it down? Like, tell me a little bit about your process when teaching those skills.
It all depends. I will say that when it's a new teacher within the first couple of years of their teaching career, it is more of breaking down and giving them more of like the little bites of how to do it, how to deal directly with this specific behavior instead of the whole picture as classroom management, right? When they are new, it's more of like they are very, very narrow focus on that one student or that one behavior. And so I help them with what they're asking for, with that one student, that one behavior. So I do break it down and I explain to them or give it to them in as many pieces as they need. And for other teachers that are more aware of that and that are able to step back and say, I understand that happens, or I've seen it before, but it still is an issue, I do more of the modeling. So I do more of the modeling or even just feedback. A lot of the feedback, because again, the feedback that I'm giving them is based on my own observation in their classroom. So, and I'm bringing a lot of awareness to what they do. So when I do feedback, I go over like, oh, so when you told Sophie to do this and she didn't do it, I love how you step back and you gave it a minute and then she did it and then you praise her for doing it. So I am very, very objective and the feedback is very specific to what they're actually doing in the classroom. So it's not like, so when I say instead, you can do this the next time or, and I give them specific feedback again with their students, you know, using their students' names. Oh, I noticed that this student is not answering to any of the questions. You may want to bring more of his participation doing this and that. So I take off whatever is happening in their classroom and I use the behavior that is to change, and I give them the skills on how to do it. Again, something that I do is that I observe what their personality is, right? So if I walk into a classroom where the teacher is super mellow and soft and come here, I tell you once, you know, like that type of personality, I am not going to ask her to go hardcore on a strategy, right? And if I go to the, I'm going to give her something that she can handle, that she can feel comfortable, that it's something that she feels okay and ethical doing. And if I go next door with the Latina teacher, right, I'm not going to ask her to go down mellow and all that if it does not match her personality. So I try to find strategies and very specific tailored to what they are in their classroom, like who they are in the classroom, because that is important. I cannot ask any teachers to do something that they will not feel comfortable, because that's not who they are. So that's what I'm saying about bringing BCBAs the first time. If you're going in, be observant enough to understand who that teacher is with their students so you can approach them correctly.
Absolutely. You know, and I feel like that is definitely something we have to continue looking at, you know, because at the end of the day, like, this is not just us telling you what to do. This is just a team effort. This is a team effort. You know, we're all in this together. We're here to support each other. You know, I'm here to support you. And, you know, I'm also you're here supporting me in the sense that I'm getting to know your classroom and getting to know what you do on a daily basis and what you deal with on a daily basis, you know?
Yes. And something that I do before I leave the classroom, after we work together, we talked about it and whatever it is, I always ask them as a teacher, was this helpful? Is there anything you want me to do different next time? And I said, you know what, if you need to think about it, or it's something, you know, often it takes a minute for everything to sink in. So just, you know, send me a text or send me an email. And before I go back, if I'm going to go back to that specific teacher the next day, I make sure that I send her a text or an email, whatever the communication is, the form of communication. I ask her, hey, how was last session? Is there anything you want me to do different? Did you think of anything you want me to prepare for you? So I have it ready for you. I know you don't have enough time or extra time, you know, so I'm always letting them know that I am open to change my own ways to make them feel comfortable.
Yeah. And I was going to say too, I mean, that's where, again, like, we have to adjust, you know, we can't just stick into our own like bubble. If something is not effective, we have to ultimately, you know, be there to help out. We have to be there to support. And so kind of on that note too, how would you say that you promote collaboration and teamwork amongst school staff, whether that be teachers, aides, paraprofessionals, and to ensure consistency in behavior management strategies across different classrooms and different settings as well?
I love building momentum with their strengths. So if I'm observing, I don't know, teacher A, I go and, you know, I give her feedback. I love how you did this with this student. And then I ask, do you mind if I share this that you did, that we just talked about with Teach B? She's like, yeah, for sure. So she, you know, I'm building up momentum and she feels like, oh my gosh, you know, like what I did was great. It's going to go across the other room. So then I go with teacher B and I'm like, oh my gosh, you're not going to believe what teacher A did. She did this. Can I show you? And so I'm kind of like transferring those skills from classroom to classroom and building that momentum, and then be like, hey, if you have any questions, go back to teacher A. She really nailed it. You know, and so I am making them again aware of their strengths across classrooms, and I bring all of those strategies. What I like doing is that I give the assistant principal, who's normally the person that I communicate with, give them a list of this kind of like strategies or strengths that I'm talking about. I make a whole list and I bring it to the assistant principal, which again, everyone wants, you know, like it's not like teacher A is going to be mad for me going and saying how great she's doing. So I'm not giving any report or anything. I'm just making a list of all of the things that they are doing great. And I say, hey, for your next meeting, if you want to go over this, or if another teacher is struggling in the future with, I don't know, with a child who cries when is dropped off at school, make sure to reach out to teacher A because she handled it so well. So I'm kind of like putting out there what they are great at and how they can help each other. And I'm ultimately giving them feedback and praising them for how they're doing it.
Oh my goodness. That is just, that is, see, and that I feel like is so important, you know, being able to highlight their strengths, highlight the things that they're good at, you know, highlight the positive feedback. Yes, there's going to be some corrective feedback along the way, but, and there's going to be some things that we might say, hey, like maybe watch a little bit of this, you know, hey, this is a way that we can do this, but bring the positive strengths in there, bring those positives in there. Cause I think that is ultimately something that is just helpful, not just for teachers, but for everybody, you know?
Yes, yes, absolutely. And I got to tell you, as a teacher, many times, almost every day, I will see my teacher friend at the end of the day and just like be like, oh, how was your day? You know, like, you don't even know what's happening next door. Like, you don't know. Like, it's just all day you're on the go in your own classroom, and you don't get to see whether it's good or bad. You just don't get to see until you hear about it. So if I am there bouncing from one classroom to another, I'm going to be the one bringing the good about it, right? I'm going to go and be like, hey, I just came from there, and you know what? She did that. And then at the end, before I go, do you mind if I share what you did with this student? And just like bringing that information in and now, so they know, hey, my friend in front can handle this for me. And next time it happens to me, I'm totally calling her. You know, so I kind of like facilitate that communication.
I love that so much. Oh my goodness. Oh, I love it. I love it. Well, I'm going to go ahead and talk about our second code word. Our second code word is whiteboard. That is WHITEBOARD. That is whiteboard. I just have a few more questions. So let's talk about, you know, the future of behavior consulting in classrooms. What do you see as like future trends or developments in the field for classroom consulting as a behavior analyst?
It is rising. It is growing very fast. You know, the number of students that are struggling, it is more clear to me the need for movement. It is often seen for teachers, I don't want to say a waste of time, that's not the word, but I will say something that comes in their way, right? Because as a teacher, you have to get through your lesson plan. You have to teach that information. So when it comes to moving, it is apparently time that is not used effectively, right? That's kind of like the stigma that I always try to change. Because I say, listen, when you're teaching, you are redirecting students that are moving on their chairs, turning their backs, looking over there, starting to move a lot. And then the time that you, and again, I go with the data, right? Let me show you, let me take data on how much time you spend redirecting students that are moving or engaging in maladaptive behaviors. And then I show them, well, you spent 5 minutes redirecting, you spent 15 minutes redirecting. This, I can give you a list. And again, this is me giving them the resources. I'm not going to just going to tell them, you should do this. You should do movement exercises with them. No, I say, I'm going to come back tomorrow or whenever I come back. I'm going to come back next week with a list of 15 things you can do in your classroom in those 5 minutes. So I'm going to challenge you to use 5 minutes every day to allow them to move and jump and get those wiggles out and see if your redirections are decreasing. So that is like the one thing, like in the future, if you're a BCBA going into classrooms, I'll say, look out for that and definitely bring strategies to help teachers bring those opportunities for movement and just breaks throughout their lesson, because they have to get through their lesson. And sometimes in putting that movement in or games, it almost makes them feel like, I don't have time for this. You know, I just need to get through my work. I just need to get them to learn this, to finish this project. And they miss that, how important and how helpful in putting movement in there will be for their class. So that's kind of like the advice for where it's going and things that they can look out and help with.
I love that. And I feel like that brings me to my last question, you know, As you know, there's a lot of stigma, and as you know that there's even legislation out there about, you know, like the limitation of behavior analysts and behavior technicians even going into schools as like outside contract providers to even support and help out in the classroom. And I know that some of those laws are changing throughout the United States, but unfortunately, that is still something that we are facing just as a country in general, because, you know, there is specific legislation. So what can we do as behavior analysts, and even for like our behavior technicians that are also listeners, what can we do to ultimately do better and do right by our clients, teachers, paraprofessionals, and their classroom mates?
Get the work done for them. Present solutions, not ideas. Again, if you want the teacher to bring in more activity movements, don't say, oh, it will help you if you get your students to move and do more brain breaks. No, do the work. Get them the exact assignment. Give them the links of the songs you found that match for that class. Give them the actual resources so they can just have it there for their implementation. It is a very, I think that breaks relationships when teachers are just being suggested on things that they do not have the time to do. And these are teachers that are already working after contracted hours. So if I want the change, like me, Stephanie Rivero, going into the classrooms, if I want to see the change, I give them the resources. I'm like, here are 15 options for you. And I don't care if they do one that they like instead of one of my 15. I'm not gonna get hurt because they are not using my resources. At the end of the day, I am just facilitating my feedback. This is what I think it will help. Here is what it looks like. This is an example of what I'm telling you. Here are 5 more examples. And you don't have time for my feedback. I'll go outside of your classroom, record myself giving you feedback, and email it to you. But you will get it the way you want it. You wanted me to speak to you, I'll read it and talk to you and leave and email you a 3-minute feedback. Goodbye, you got it the way you wanted, and I'm done. So find ways to just facilitate those resources to them.
That is such sound advice. And I hope that our listeners are taking that seriously to heart, because, you know, one of the things that we run into in our country is that we can't necessarily go into schools, at least not in certain areas. And, you know, I feel like, you know, Stephanie, you were such a really great guest to talk about all of these different things with me, because, you know, I feel like we can definitely do better as a field, because, you know, there is that stigma, but we have to break that stigma by ultimately helping and providing solutions and not just giving ideas. Oh, you could do this, you could do that, but giving the roadmap, you know, because at the end of the day, we're here, we're the behavior experts. And I say that in quotations, but the teacher is the expert on their classroom. And when we're giving them the roadmap of what we see, and doing it with compassion and kindness, and also just being mindful of their classroom in general, I feel like that is really going to be a big help to our teachers, you know?
Absolutely. Well, thank you for your feedback. I'm glad this was helpful to you.
Yeah, thank you.
You know, my heart is a teacher and my brain is a behavior analyst. It's just a combination of both. Again, as I said, I am very blessed to have the opportunity to do both every single day and work with, you know, the teachers and in the education field doing applied behavior analysis. It's such a dream.
That is amazing. Oh my goodness. Well, I appreciate your time with me tonight, Stephanie. Where can our listeners find you?
Normally, not absolutely at Wired Behavior on Instagram.
Perfect. Perfect. Well, thank you so much, everyone, for tuning in to tonight's podcast. This has been Michelle Zeman. I have been your host, and I look forward to the next one. Thanks, guys. Bye.